I wanted to say a few things about this retreat. I thought at first that it was a silent retreat, and if you feel the need to chat, I would ask you to go outside so whoever you're chatting with, you aren't disturbing anybody else. We can talk during meals, but let's keep it to what's happening, not about what last movie you saw or what you're going to do next weekend. And always feel free to come and ask me questions, and I'm happy to meet with people privately. I don't want to make it rigid, because if it's rigid, then one, the people start pushing against it. But if you move into the retreat aware of others rather than what you want to do, then everything will flow for you. You see, in my theme park, it's all built around me. And every one of your theme parks are built around every one of you. Because that theme park keeps validating our ego, which never existed in the first place. So moving into Dharma is really letting go of every aspect of how we relate to ourselves and the world, and shifting that. And until it becomes experiential, and it starts happening on its own, one moves forward just with faith and trust in that innate glimpse that there's more. And if you allow for the possibility of more, that awareness, that experience will rise in you. And be absolutely aware of the messages you give yourself. Like when I was just talking with Jan, every statement we make to ourselves, it doesn't even have to be through somebody else, becomes an impediment that then has to be torn down later. So watch, what's most important is how you use your mind, your relative mind. That's critical. Are you going to get caught? Of course. Practice isn't being clear. Practice is bringing ourselves back. And bringing ourselves back until being back is more natural than not. I mean, my years traveling with Rinpoche, I thought when I started traveling with them, I was going to get all these secret teachings. No, it was just, he poked and poked. And if I reacted, he poked harder. Sometimes he didn't speak to me for 2 weeks until I got it. It wasn't a high traveling with him. I shed more tears during all those years than I had in my whole lifetime up to then. And I shed a lot in my life. But the one thing, I had given up so much to be with him. My pride wouldn't let me walk away. That's one. And I trusted him. I knew he cared about me. And I knew he was always watching. And I knew he got fast enjoyment when he hooked me. Now it's funny. I mean, he pokes and I laugh. And then he laughs. But if I argued, it's not what we're arguing about, it's the fact that I'm reacting. We need to start going through our lives where everything is an action, not a reaction. The moment we react, we're just setting up. It becomes mindless. Then the other person reacts, and then we react back. Makes no sense. Why do I have to be right? Well, I tell you, it used to be very important to me to be right. Having trust and faith. Give us a short story and then we'll meditate. All right, I'm sitting here talking to you all. But from the age of 4 until, God, I became a nun at 36? Yeah, that's what I said. So probably until I was 45, I stuttered on every word I spoke. And even after I got out of three-year retreat and I started leading retreats, it wasn't a matter of what was I going to say, it was a matter of whether I could get the words out. And then I went to Seattle. You never know when you're going to get a glimpse. To hear Stephen Levine speak, you know, on death and dying. And I was thinking of this when I came in. He was sitting in a chair like this with his legs out in front and crossed, just very relaxed. And people sitting all around him on the floor. And I watched him wait for the thought to come to him. And then it came out of his mouth. So it wasn't so much him creating what he was speaking that was flowing through him. And I remember as I was sitting there and watching this, I said, I want to be able to do that. And I don't know how much longer it took. I mean, Ayin Rinpoche was merciless with my stuttering. We were in New York City once. There were 100 people there. And he would turn to me and he would ask me a question that had the word Buddhist in the answer. And I would do boo, 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 boo. He'd look at me and say, Martha, what is a boo, 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 boo? He didn't let me hide. But eventually, what I learned is if I go through my heart, I don't stutter. If I go through my head, I stutter to this day. So my jobs, working, doing all that, in order to function, be able to answer phones, this is my everyday life, I had to come through my heart. Otherwise, I could not do it. So in a way, I was very, very lucky because it was something that was so apparent. But you can function through the heart-mind. There's a little dissociative experience for a while, 3 months, 6 months, a year even, when you move the seat of your awareness or your relative interaction from the brain to the heart. I thought I had lost half my IQ for a while. But somehow I didn't know what was happening. But then the stuttering went away. I could lead groups, I could do talks. As long as I wasn't fearful, egotistical, you know, all the things that define coming through the brain. And why it happened for me, what I'm not special, was because for some reason I really, really, really wanted to be able to share. Any comments, any questions? All right.
So actually I have one.
Okay.
I was thinking about chit-chatting, you know. So I was visiting my sister who likes to chit-chat, kind of, you know, and in a way that's how we relate, you know. It's kind of, I mean, she's a very sweet person, but she likes to just chatter away. And so I sort of get into that mode with her a lot of times because it's kind of a way, because for my side, it's a way to kind of be with her and kind of do it the way she does it, you know, whereas I don't know, I mean, I communicate sort of differently with other people.
Is it necessary not to be present while chit-chatting? Is it necessary not to be aware of the seat you're sitting on, the breath that's moving in your body?
Yeah, no, I don't think so, actually. I think you can do both.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then it's something, it's a way of relating and acknowledging her,
right. But
not acknowledging yourself.
Yeah, I'm not demanding that she communicate.
No, you don't. By just doing it her way and not being present, you're not acknowledging who you are.
Oh, I see. That's what you're saying.
But to share with her in that way, because that's the way she communicates and it interacts, is an acknowledgement of her.
Right.
But you don't have to lose yourself in that.
Yeah, you know, I used to feel sometimes with her that I was, you know, it wasn't very satisfactory to me because I felt like I couldn't really be who I was. But I could kind of shift into gears with her. But more recently, I don't really make that distinction anymore.
Good.
It's like I really want to be with her, and I really want to sort of honor her, and so whatever that takes is okay, you know. And I don't worry anymore about well, I don't, you know, this is kind of a different side of me than, you know, my kind of other life.
It's all you.
Okay.
We don't have to segment it up, because it's the same thread that runs through all of it, and it's either with awareness or not awareness. Mm-hmm. My sister, I care about her a lot, but when I went off to India the first time, she felt she was losing her sister, mm-hmm. and she never asked me a question about anything I do, and doesn't understand why I'm not going to move to Blue Ridge, Georgia and live with her. And I said, well, because I've got, you know, my groups and what I do out here. And she said, well, there is one Buddhist here. But she, it's beyond her, she's just not interested. So when I visit her or she visits me, it's much the same thing. I go to all the secondhand stores with her because that's what she likes doing, and I keep asking her questions.
Yeah.
So questions. That's how, it's the same thing. That's how, if I want to communicate with her, because if I challenge her, she will shut down and not say anything.
Right.
But that's her problem, it's not mine.
Yeah.
When you're telling these stories about your interactions with the Rinpoche, I have to say that there are moments where I'm going, ouch.
Oh yeah, I had a lot of moments going, ouch, too.
I bet you did. And so I'm trying to work through that ouch, because, it was clear that his intent was caring, positive. But I see you in that moment of being, you know, pointed out while you're stuttering. Ouch, when I see that happen. And just trying to think about that, the kindness and the ouch at the same time.
I don't know that I would have really been able to stop stuttering if I hadn't had those years previous with him.
Mm-hmm. You don't think there was another way?
I don't think I would have realized the difference between coming through the brain and the heart. And not talking about the stuttering. When I wanted to take my next level nun's vows, I would ask Rinpoche, and he wouldn't talk to me about it. And we were traveling all over Europe, and he was teaching. My brother was the driver. And then he was leaving for Mettelon, which was the other side of Germany, the next day. I was going to be studying in Hamburg at a Galupa center. And he was up in someplace about an hour north of Hamburg. Anyway, I went in to see him. And I started talking about next level nun's vows, which was the 10 vows. And He said, I told you I won't talk to you about it. And I start crying, and I said, I can't talk to you. I'm leaving. He said, Martha, you always do that when you don't like the way things are going. But I would think very carefully before you get up and walk out the door. And I slid back down the wall. Well, I ended up going to Medellin too. And I went, and what he had said, why don't you go talk to Lama Jorpel in Medellin? Okay. So I went to Medellin, and I did talk to Lama Jorpel, who I knew. And it turned out, I think the next morning was very auspicious, astrologically. So I don't know, it was like 5 a.m. the next day. But that afternoon, I went to see Rinpoche. I knocked on his door. He said, who's there? I said, it's me. And he said, and he opened the door and said, what do you want? And I had gone to tell him about Lama Jorpel, but I didn't even get the words out. But it was like I was revisiting the same subject again. And he said he wouldn't talk to me about it. And he's walking around the room telling me what a horrible nun I would be and all the things I do wrong. And I'm sitting there thinking, Martha, keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything. And then, now you have to remember, I'd already been with him by this time for a long time, and I traveled with him for a long time. And finally, I got up and I was leaving, and I found the words popping out of my mouth. And my back was to Rinpoche, and I said, I'm really glad you're the way you are, because if you were any different, I wouldn't be forced to look at my own mind. I didn't know where those words came from. But I turned around and glanced at him, and there was a huge smile on his face. Well, the next morning, I took the vows, and about 10 o'clock, and Rinpoche was leaving this day, I went to Rinpoche's room, I knocked on the door, he opened the door, and I started to say something about the vows. He said, I told you I wouldn't talk to you about it, and I said, wait a minute. And he said, say it again. And I said, I came to tell you I took the vows with Lama Jorpel this morning. And he smiled, he said, come in, there's so much you can do, there's so much you can help me with. What he was, since I was so prone to doing things because it made me look good in other people's eyes, he didn't want me to take the vows because of him. He wanted me to take the vows because this is what I wanted to do. And so that whole thing, the whole month, it was probably a month this time, was bringing me to the awareness that I was doing it for myself. And then after he was just joyful and, I mean, delighted. And I think back now, thank heavens it happened before he left. But is it hard being with a teacher that close? Yes, and it doesn't matter who they are. If you spend, and it doesn't matter whether they're Buddhist or any other kind, their job is to point you to the teacher within. And they will do it differently with every student. But that is their whole job. It isn't anything for themselves. And it isn't a matter that the teacher can make you realize true nature of mind. So were times difficult? Incredibly. But always I had an inkling inside, through all the clenching. And I never doubted that he cared about me. And he had nothing to get one way or another. I mean, I didn't have a lot of money. There wasn't anything he could want for me. There were times in Delhi we scraped the bottom of our bags just to get a meal. Did I like it then? No. Am I grateful? Absolutely. It's like going on 3-year retreat and knowing intellectually that a lot of stuff will come up. Oh, I can deal with that. But when stuff comes up, it's not intellectual. It's the same feelings of upset or depression, whatever needs to be purified. It's not something out there. It's the totality of your experience in that moment. If you don't have a refuge, if you don't remember that everything is impermanent, it's a horrendous feeling. It's like back in the 60s when people used to take LSD and they thought for the first time and they thought they were going on a trip. And then they found out they were the trip. That's the difference. So even when stuff comes up, it's impermanent. And you can think back to all the times that you've had a hard time before, had the same feelings, and it was a different circumstance. And what am I doing that is keeping this experience going? Enough talking, let's meditate, unless anybody has a question.
Can reflecting on the past and looking to the future be beneficial or detrimental to being present?
Oh, if you're in the past, you aren't present. If you're in a future thought, you aren't present. So if you're looking to the past, you're thinking about it. So you aren't being present. Present is feeling the aliveness of the moment. Do we have to make plans for the future? Sometimes yes. I mean, if you're going on a trip or something's going to be happening. But do what one has to do and then let it go. It's not now, so don't carry it with you moment by moment. And I remember one time in Nepal talking about the past. I was with Lama Jorpel, and He got up and he just walked across the room. He said, "Do you see that?" He said, "That's gone. Don't hold on to it. It's gone. No matter what happened in that, it's all gone." The place we keep the past is only in our thoughts. So of course it hinders being present.
Ani, a sense of reflection on mistakes that we've made in the past. If we don't look at those, are we not able to change and make better choices from looking at the past choices we've
Well, made? I think if something arises up into the present moment, you have the awareness of, oh, and you connect it with the past. But, and that can be what initiates the whole process. But people kind of get caught in the story of the past. And that's a real problem. It's like talking about desire, hatred, and ignorance. Wanting something isn't, or going out and buying something isn't the problem, but identifying with it is. Or, so it's not so much the thing in itself, but how we use our mind around it. Am I making sense, Claire? Okay.
I think that's what, it reminds me of what Geshe-la was talking about last night when he said, it's when you fuse the past and the present, or the present and the future, that's where the problem lies. You know, I think you can look back and reflect on, you know, on what you, you know, what you did, but if you're doing it from the present moment, that's different than reliving, you know, that past thing with your old emotions.
Becoming the story.
Yeah, becoming the story.
But I wouldn't go back there seeking. I would let something arise that makes you look at the back. I mean, a feeling, in intuition, a reaction even, where you, huh, I felt this before. Then you can look at, you start getting an understanding of your own processes. But it's so tricky not to let it become a story. Let's take